Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Stop it! Did not do him like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a joy to talk to our buddy KC Johnson, especially when the Bulls have some big news. And KC joins us on the Home Run In Hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. Good morning, KC. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Well, you know, pretty fired up. I think the Bulls did well for themselves. You know, I like Lonzo. I like the idea that they have a point guard. I think they're a different team, a better team this morning than they were yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think just from really almost a symbolic standpoint, you've got to admire what happened just in the sense that, you know, they fire the opening salvo of free agency, kind of helping to change the perception, you know, that they can go after their number one target and get him. Obviously, they've been linked to him since the March trade deadline when they tried to trade for him back then. But I agree with you, Mully. He checks a lot of boxes for things that the Bulls need to improve upon. And then, you know, we can get into the Caruso signing in a little bit. But I think just in general, you're seeing a front office target perimeter defense and just kind of toughness and connectivity. Both these players are like connecting type players. So, you know, you're starting to see kind of a roster build out by Arturis Karnišovas and his staff.
Casey, let's take a step backward though and look from the Bulls' big picture in terms of what do they like most about Lonzo Ball. And I guess the question that I also have is sort of a nagging one. Why is he on his third team in 5 years and New Orleans was so willing to let him go?
Yeah, that's the one that I got a lot. As far as I can't speak to the Lakers situation, he wasn't really on my radar back then, and I haven't heard much buzz around the league about that. But, you know, a lot of pressure obviously coming in the number two overall pick, and then, you know, he didn't play great coming into the league. So that'd be my speculation on that. I don't know the inside story on it. He's certainly improved every year he's been in the league, and it's coming off his best year. So that leads into your second question, and I did get a direct answer from some people I talked to, not only, you know, around the Bulls situation, but just in general around the league. You know, they really like the way Kyra Lewis, their rookie, played last year, and just they think he's a better fit. So I think that they probably liked Lonzo Ball, but probably not the price that he got. And, you know, obviously they had other designs on what they wanted to do with their cap situation. I'm not sure if they were pull them all off yet. Pretty crazy and busy day kept by watching Team USA until 1:30 in the morning. So I'm a little bit on fumes this morning, but I do know that they like Lewis and just the way his style of play and the way he, you know, plays alongside Zion, and he's on a rookie deal. So my sense in talking to people is that they like Lonzo Ball, but not at the price tag that he got.
What do you think of Caruso? What is his role? I'd just be curious. I think we know who Lonzo Ball is, and we know why they wanted him, but maybe we don't know as much about Caruso and why was he available. The Lakers just seem to have run out of money or spent it all on the superstars, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have the ability to, you know, re-sign him because they had his bird rights, but, you know, that would have been a pretty big luxury tax bill hit. So, I can't speak to the Lakers' thoughts on that. I do know I read one piece from a prominent Lakers blogger who talked about the outcry that is going to ensue because, you know, he is a valuable piece. He's one of those guys who may not wow you always in the box score, but just is one of those guys who kind of impacts the game and, you know, was a pretty big favorite of LeBron James. So he's just turned himself into a very good shooter, shot 40% from three last year, albeit at low volume. Very, very physical and pesky defender. And look, how many times did you guys hear Billy Donovan talk about the Bulls' inability to handle, you know, the point of attack last year, just with guards getting hung up on screens or getting beat off the dribble and out with penetration? So, you know, both of these players, you know, particularly Caruso, can help in that regard. So, That's what I read from this signing. And then, you know, you also heard it with Io's drafting last week. You know, Arturas said it himself, I value toughness, and that Caruso checks that box too. So, you know, I've had some people suggest maybe it's a little bit of an overpay. This is not confirmed yet, but one thing that's out there that I do believe that they're trying to do is they're trying to fit him into a three-way deal with the Lakers and Rockets, in which Daniel Tice is signed and traded. And that why that would be important is if they're able to pull that off, is it would allow them to keep their full mid-level exception of $9.5 million to round out the roster. Because as we can all see, they targeted backcourt help last night, and they're still pretty thin up front.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a second, Casey, but let's follow up with this Daniel Tice thing, because, okay, Alex Caruso, 4 years, $37 million to back up, essentially, Lonzo Ball is great, and I understand everything you said about him is valuable, but who's going to protect the rim? And Daniel Tice signed for 4 years and $36 million, so would that money have been better spent at an interior guy like Tice, who you know and who you appreciated when he was here last year?
Well, I'll speak directly to that, because that last line I would dispute. The sense I've got, the people I've talked to, is that the Bulls did not like Tice at the money that they knew he was going to get. I've been reporting for a while that he's going to be gone. I was told originally the Hornets were going to be in on him, and then they obviously went and got one of the 1,000 Plumlees that are running around. I think it was Mason, but so they went out of the running there, and then the Rockets situation bubbled up last week. I can't remember who was first to report that. So, but that's kind of why my sense is that they're trying to do this, because they knew what Tice was getting, and so they went out and got a guard that can fit that same salary slot in the hopes they can preserve their mid-level exception if they're able to engineer this sign-and-trade situation.
You know, DeMar DeRozan was mentioned. Is that just noise?
Yeah, I have not been able to get that confirmed, but it's been reported by reputable reporters. I did ask a couple people directly and didn't get an answer. But that would be a situation where, you know, Lauri Markkanen is still in play as a potential asset, and the Spurs, I know, had interest in him. Now, I will say that some of the moves that the Spurs made yesterday, including the signing of former Bull Doug McDermott, you know, did address their shooting situation. So I don't know if you're going to be able to extract DeMar DeRozan for Lauri Markkanen. My sense is no. But I also will say, if you know, DeMar DeRozan made $27 million last year, he's going to be looking probably at a pay cut, but his pay cut would be much less substantial here if they're able to engineer some kind of sign and trade surrounding Lauri Markkanen than if he were to go to, say, Miami, where his buddy Kyle Lowry is, and, you know, he can kind of form a super team, so to speak, because Miami's running out of money. So that's a to be determined. But again, I see need up front right now. I mean, the way I see it, they've got Vucevic, Thad Young, and Marco coming over, the second-round pick, right, from Simonovic from 2020. Now, I don't think this is going to happen, but you can never say never on the Lowry situation. You know, what if he goes through restricted free agency, doesn't like his options, and the Bulls are like, yeah, we could do you for $9 million, the qualifying offer. I don't expect that to happen, but, you know, you never say never in free agency until it's all done. It's a crazy game of musical chairs every year.
It just doesn't seem like he would fit now, Casey, doesn't it? I mean, I understand what you say is true because of the salary sliding and because of the limited maybe interest from other teams, but it's almost like they're down the road so far now, they almost have to deal him for the good of this roster the way they want it constructed.
Completely agree with you, David. And the other thing I would say is, you brought up a good point earlier about Tice. Even if he's not the guy you like, you do need rim protection alongside Vucevic. That was proven last year. That was proven one game into past post-trade when Billy Donovan moved Markin into that reserve role and started Tice alongside Vucevic. So, you know, can Thad Young rim protect? Sure. But, you know, not at the he doesn't have the heights that some of these other guys you're probably targeting are, number one. And number two, you don't want to turn that dude into dust after, you know, in year 15. So it's clear with whatever exceptions they have, whether they are able to preserve the mid-level or they have the biannual or veteran minimum. So they're going to be, you know, targeting a rim protecting big. So I would expect that signing to be happening in the coming days.
Yeah, I you know, it's when you look at it, you would see on paper that this is a big help to what they're doing. And now, I mean, I know it's not like a big three like you have with Brooklyn, but it's their version of it. And you would think with a point guard, this looks like a playoff team. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, the column I wrote at our site, NBCSportsChicago.com, I mean, to me, this is almost directly analogous to when John Paxson took over for Jerry Krause. And, you know, managerial changes at the Bulls happen so infrequently that people may have forgotten this. But in two seasons, from 03 when John got the job to 05, end of 05, he flipped the entire roster except for Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler. That team in 04-05 won 47-35. Home court advantage, lost in the first round of the playoffs. Maybe they were the five seed. That's a long time ago. I can't remember. But they lost to the Wizards in the first round. Regardless, they made the playoffs, won 47 games. This team has to make the playoffs.
Right.
Arturis now has had two off seasons. He has flipped the roster except for three players, one more than John, Zach, Thad, and Kobe White. This is assuming Markkanen is gone, so it could be four, I guess, technically. But right now it's three. And this team needs to make the playoffs. It's as simple as that. I mean, he's had two off seasons, and he would be the first one to tell you that too. He talked about how much of a disappointment it was having the trade, not lead to a play-in tournament. So yeah, that's the bar, and the East is better and good. So it's going to be challenging, but you can see again a roster taking shape here, and now it's got to lead to some victories and some playoff appearances.
Casey, do these backcourt moves for Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso make Kobe White's role more defined or more ambiguous?
Well, I think it makes his role more defined. I think it makes his future maybe a little bit more ambiguous. Obviously he's going to be out until I would guess December at the earliest with that shoulder surgery. But as far as his role, I mean, he's clearly a catch and shoot reserve, right? I mean, that's obvious. And that also is what I think always has been his best role. You can argue the reserve part, but clearly he's more of a catch and shoot player. But with Caruso at 4 years, and I'm trying to find out if there's an option on that fourth year, whether it's a team option or not. I haven't been able to nail that down yet, but, with Caruso here at 4 years and Lonzo here at 4 years and him going to be coming up for a rookie extension in that time, that question is a valid one about his future. But for his role for this coming season, to me, it totally slots it exactly where it needs to be.
So what's left? I mean, what happens today?
I'm going to go for a run to wake up.
Okay, so there's no you don't expect action on the Bulls front?
No, of course I expect action. I mean, they're not done. You structure the signings. It's like an air traffic controller lining up the flights, right? So you structure the signings. The second round picks will come last. But you got to project them to be on the roster. So from my count, they're up to 11 players. So they got four spots left if they want to go 15, which I assume they will. I'm not counting the two-way guys. Devin Dotson will almost certainly be one of those. So they got four roster spots. So, check Twitter, check Woj's Twitter, check Shams' Twitter, check my Twitter. I mean, there's going to be some signings coming. It's just whether it happens today or tomorrow. You know who they should sign, Mully? And I do want to give you credit for this. You tipped me off to that Blake Shilve guy. That dude is a baller, man. At 37, he lit them up in the first quarter.
There you go. There you go.
Come on.
Wow.
Hey, go Ramblers.
KC, before you go out in your 10K here and jog your way, look, Zach LaVine said some things yesterday again about his contract situation. What are we to make of the latest, and how does this keep coming up?
Well, it keeps coming up because he keeps getting asked about it. He was on a Zoom call, and, obviously he'd said similar things in a group session to us and then in a one-on-one with Rob Schaefer from Vegas. So, he just keeps getting asked about it. I will say this, two things I know to be true, unless I'm missing something and maybe some trades can happen that can take them below. I don't think so. I think they're going to be operating as an over-the-cap team, which means they don't have the cap space to do that renegotiate and extend, which would push this LaVine business off until next season. Now, obviously, the danger you run there is he becomes an unrestricted free agent. Now, that said, if you read what he said, I'm loyal to Chicago. I want my respect, but I love being here. I know for a fact that he's over the moon about the Lonzo Ball move. I was told that directly by somebody close to him. So he already loved the Vucevic move. He's publicly talked about how much he connects with Billy Donovan and is looking forward to continuity there. I mean, again, you never say never till the ink is dry, but all signs are trending to this marriage continuing. It's just it's probably going to be pushed till next offseason.
I think it's super cool that he's with all these NBA players while this is going on, and presumably everybody's talking about with each other about what, you know, what it means for the team, et cetera. I think that's a good
for sure.
Yeah.
And for the league, like all these guys are just sitting around, you know, they're quarantined together. They're talking about, oh man, you see that move. Oh, that team's going to be great. You know, and he's rubbing elbows with the best players in the league. So, and by the way, he played well again last night. I mean, he didn't play a lot in the second half because Jason Tatum got it going, but he played well again. His on-ball defense was very strong in double figures again. So he's not only as USA playing better as the tournament is advanced, Zach's been a big part of it. So be nice for him to come home with a gold medal in that experience.
Great stuff, KC. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, KC.
All right, guys, later.
Well, we'll get on the Woj bombs and we'll see what Shams is doing.
Have a good run, KC.
Yeah, but there is. I mean, something's going to happen.
Oh, you
There's
know it.
Tons of stuff.
This is only day two.
No, it's just getting going. And this is, you know, this is where they really got to make their hay. And I guess they already have when you break it down. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Why did we have just nothing but crickets when it came to extension talks?
Yeah, I think that's always going to be my great frustration. But at the same time, I say that, you know, I put my head on the pillow every night knowing that we did everything we could to extend these guys. You know, I think that, as I said, the day after or right after the trade deadline, you know, that I think the offers that we made will stand up exceptionally well historically. I don't know why we weren't able to reach extensions. We sort of put ourselves out there to do that. And ultimately, you know, obviously, you know, those players didn't feel like that the offers we made were good enough. And I think that's the bottom line. But do I feel like those things will hold up incredibly well historically? Absolutely.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is Cubs president Jed Hoyer talking about the offers that were made to players that were not accepted, which led to the giant trade-off, if you will, and defending, if you will, his role, the team's role in trying to get deals done and putting some of the onus on the players.
Well, saying without saying it, that it takes two to strike a deal.
Sure.
And I think what we want to do, the temptation is when you have this mass exodus, is that we want to collectively look at what the Cubs failed to do, and that was lock up these long-term contracts with stars and legends and guys who are now ex-Cubs. But I think in fairness, individually, you look at had they been able to, you know, strike a deal with even one guy, you wouldn't feel as empty as a Cub fan. It wouldn't be as dramatic. And I think that individually, each case was different. And maybe Jed looks at it and suggests that the overarching theme was, you know, we weren't able to make a deal because there was a difference in opinion and what they were value, what they were worth. But I think in each guy's case, there's a different reason for that. So
Can you explain that a little bit more?
I'll quickly go one at a time.
Please.
I think with Anthony Rizzo, there was just a disparity in what he thought he was worth and what the Cubs were willing to invest in terms of a guy on the wrong side of 30 with a bad back. I don't think Rizzo looked at it that way, certainly, and his people. For talking to people around the situation, they wanted Goldschmidt money. They looked at him.
They were disappointed by the offer.
Yes.
Okay? And let me ask something. When Jed says that historically he thinks that'll hold up, that means he's not going to get a better offer.
I think that's probably fair to say and to conclude. Wouldn't you agree with that, though?
I don't argue with that.
I don't either. So I understood the whole Anthony Rizzo logic after we saw what happened this year after he turned down their offer. He was shelved twice with a bad back. I get the Rizzo situation, okay? So that's individually, that's what I mean there. as far as Javi Baez goes, I think that they had a deal they were close to signing before the pandemic.
Yes.
Maybe those numbers, because of the biblical losses, because of the way the pandemic changed the economy of baseball, Javi's people thought they were going to be back in that neighborhood,
exactly.
Right? Shopping right. In the same neighborhood.
And the Cubs weren't.
Well, they weren't.
They weren't paying in the same
they
neighborhood.
They weren't. And you can make whatever judgment you want
no,
about that.
No, because the value of the home went down, so why would you pay
Bingo.
For something? Yes.
You look at it that way,
yeah.
And it does. You understand better why they weren't able to make a deal, right?
But you also understand from his perspective, that deal was on the table, but we live in a different world now. This is the deal you get. That's kind of upsetting.
But if you're Javi, yeah, you're like, I didn't get any worse.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the
I
same
did
player.
Wrong. Exactly.
What did I do here? So that you can understand how that maybe fell apart. And then the third situation on its own merits is Chris Bryant. And I really believe this. And I know enough about Chris Bryant's situation and the people involved here to be able to say this. Chris Bryant saying he wanted to be a Cub forever and he loved Chicago was as genuine as you're ever going to hear a professional athlete be about his intentions, okay? He wanted it, his family wanted it, and the player really wanted it. The problem was is that there was a communication gap between the player, the agent, and the team. And the agent was never going to be as gung-ho about Chris Bryant staying in Chicago as much as he was gung-ho about getting to free agency.
Yes.
And every time Chris Bryant spoke, I think it led us to believe, like, geez, you know, that guy, that's how sincere is that? Look how genuine he is. He wants to be a Cub for life. And all the while, Scott Boras wasn't buying that. And so the offer, even the offer, the $200 million plus offer, I think was a communication gap between, you know, you'll find people in the Cubs organization currently and past who will swear that that offer existed. And then you'll hear people on the Bryant camp that like, well, I don't know about any offer we turned down. And I don't know how that happens, Molly, but I think that when you look at it collectively, there was a communication breakdown between what was being presented by the player, what the agent wanted, and what the team believed. So I could get how that fell apart as well, just because there's different, so many different moving parts.
Let's get to Dustin. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Scoreboard update.
From the Northwestern Football Update Studio, I'm Dustin Rhodes. Here's what's happening. Let's stick Cubs. They were off yesterday on Monday. They are back in action tonight in Colorado. Zach Davies throws and Zach Sabin's pregame. 7:05 right here on the Score. White Sox, they were also off. They will host the Royals tonight. It's Dylan Cease on the mound. The Bulls, they've got a new backcourt. Lonzo Ball, he signed and trades with the Pelicans. 4 years, $85 million for him. Alex Caruso comes over from the Lakers. He gets 4 years, $37 million from the Bulls. Let's also continue on basketball over in the Olympics. Team USA, they were tied with Spain at halftime, pulled away to win 95-81. They move on to the semifinals. Zach LaVine finished with 10 points. Durant led the way with 29 points. And Simone Biles, she won bronze on the balance beam as she returned to competition at the Tokyo Olympics. And lastly, the Bears, they're back to work. Full pads today, 11 a.m., Soldier Field. This Wildcats return to Ryan Field. They host Michigan State. They host Iowa. Many more teams. Go out and buy the tickets, folks, at nusports.com.
I also think it's really important to, you know, kind of debunk the notion that we did not want to extend these players and that we didn't try hard to do so. And I think it's really important. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about individual negotiations or what was said or who we talked to, but as a group, that was something we tried hard. And I know, you know, speaking somewhat for Theo and for me, it was always a source of frustration that we weren't able to get any of those across the finish line, other than Kyle Hendricks, who really respect the fact that, you know, he kind of rolled up his sleeves with us and we got to a deal that we felt like made sense for both sides.
Mully at Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score, and that is the voice of Jed Hoyer, and he's talking about the deals that they could have had and the deal they did have, and the difference, I suppose, in those things. Now, you know, again, Kyle Hendricks' deal was not influenced by these changing circumstances. But, you know, I just look at the White Sox. You know, you talked about the difference between Chris Bryant and his camp versus Scott Boras, who is the agent for Chris Bryant. And he's known for getting guys on the open market and going to all bidders and trying to get the most money and all the rest of it. Carlos Rodon is represented by...
Yeah, that came to mind.
By Scott Boras.
In talking to people about all this and having, yeah, that reality kind of start to sink in.
Well, and listen, you know, he was a guy that they did not invest in, and they let him pretty much go after last year. And then they went back and they signed him to a small contract. And as he's improved, you think, wow, shouldn't they go to him and try to get a deal done? Well, they did go to Lance Lynn, and they did get a deal done. Lance Lynn is 34 years old, and he got a two-year contract, which is in line with his age and what's going on. He's found a spot that works for him, and he's obviously very valuable. So they get that done in season, and they don't often do that. It's right. Hard to get deals done in season, but they get it done. You know, Carlos Rodon is a lefty and a guy that they drafted and the highest drafted player on the team, and you'd love to have him back as well. But the reality is it's going to be much more difficult to do that given his age. He's, what, 27 years old? As opposed to 34 and his agent.
Okay.
More than anything else.
That's it though. It's the agent because whereas Lance Lynn's age was working against him in terms of any potential contract extension, Carlos Rodon's health history has to work against him somewhat.
Okay.
In terms of thinking ambitiously about how long your deal would be. But your distinction is a very good one, and it's worth remembering when you're talking about whether or not Carlos Rodon will be back with the White Sox in 2022. It doesn't really matter anymore, I guess is what I'm wondering, or how much does it matter if he wants to be here or not? Scott Boras is driving this truck.
Yes.
This is definitely the thing that you mentioned with Lance Lynn. He had to be motivated to compromise. Would you agree that he left money on the table by signing as an extension with the White Sox?
Yeah, I think he could have gotten more money on the open market.
Why didn't he?
Because I think he's happy where he's at, and he's happy at this point in his career.
And he wants to win, and that has a price to him. That is worth something to him, giving up something and sacrificing to him. That's what I think we heard from Jed Hoyer in terms of the frustration. Everything you heard publicly from the Cubs core was, oh my gosh, there's nowhere I'd rather be than Wrigley Field.
Right.
Oh my gosh, being a Cub is like the fulfillment of a dream. We won a World Series. We are legends. And then they'd get in the negotiating room or they'd get on the phone and texting and they'd be like, where's that guy?
It's interesting because Theo said something years ago where he talked about free agency and you got to make sure you're not paying for what's behind you, for what happened. You're paying for what you expect, what the future will be. I think with the Lance Lynn deal, that was a happy compromise. That was they're paying, basically the same money he's making now, but they're paying it for a couple more years as he's aging.
That's a great point.
Now,
that's something that was impossible to remove from the negotiations with the Cubs core.
Yes, because of what you just said. Because it wasn't just what they were going to do, it's that they had been, they were legends.
How could you lowball me? Do you know what I just accomplished? I am a legend. Do you know how hard it was to end the futility? And what is that worth to you as a franchise?
But I think that the disconnect may be that, like, a guy like Jed, well, we broke down the numbers correctly for the player, and this is what he's going to make, when the reality is the player thinks, well, I won a World Series. I'm a legend. There's got to be the legend tax.
The legend tax. I like it. And the player is going to look at it more emotionally. And when we would hear them talk, they were playing to that reality and playing to the public, if you will. Whereas if you're an executive, and I think the best executives are able to not act emotionally, they're able to respond analytically. And analytically, this was a defensible position that Jed Hoyer took in terms of doing what he did to the extent that he did it. Emotionally, it's very hard to accept and process still because of what those guys meant to this franchise.
It is a reality in all sports that what you will accept for the team that you're negotiating with is different than what you will accept once you're removed from that team or cut from that team or you end up somewhere else. You know, you may not get the same contract, but you're going to want more from the team you're with than they're going to give you. That's the reality of
because
sports.
You've given them more of yourself.
And that's your attitude.
And that's impossible to remove from any conversation, any negotiation, because it's human nature just to think that you're entitled to something that you may not feel like, that the other side doesn't feel like you're entitled to.
All right, we're going to bring in Mike Florio, and we're going to ask him, will there be a big trade, including one Nick Foles? I think we know the answer to the question, but we'll ask it anyway. It's Mully and Haugh on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. FootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
We got game! We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We got
BB! NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mully at Haugh, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio, and he joins us on the Home Run In Hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are you?
We're doing great. We talked to our man in Japan, Bob Vassilopoulos, earlier today, and he's making it happen at the Olympics.
At least you hear from him. He gave me the cold shoulder.
Well, he's working. So help us out, Mike. We're trying to get a Nick Foles trade going. Now, we think the Colts really need Nick Foles, and it's just not happening. What are they going to do? Are they going to wait and see what goes on with the quarterback? If he's out for a while, shouldn't they go back to Phillip Rivers and see if he can leave his fledgling coaching career in high school and come back and take some snaps?
Well, who knows what kind of shape Phillip Rivers is in. Drew Brees said not that long ago that when you stop throwing like you throw when you're trying to get ready to play football, it falls apart pretty quickly. So I don't know that Rivers would want to come back. They really like Jacob Eason, and that's not something they're just saying now as puffery in order to drive down a trade cost for getting a Nick Foles or someone else. They really liked him when we were in the stage of the offseason where, you know, everyone's in the best shape of their life. Everyone's going to stay healthy all year long. Every team is going to be 17-0. Back in that period of boundless optimism, there was a lot of positivity about Jacob Eason. And for now, he's the guy. And it may change, but for now, he's the guy.
So you see very little chance of Nick Foles being dangled to the Colts. And if he's not being... if they're not interested at all, maybe they're watching the tape from the last couple of seasons, or does that have anything to do with his past relationship with Carson Wentz?
Well, I think that there's always posturing that happens in cases like this. The Colts don't want to get screwed in what they give up for Nick Foles. Remember when the Vikings abruptly lost Teddy Bridgewater 5 years ago, later this month? They had nowhere to turn. They gave up a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick for Sam Bradford, whom the Eagles gladly pushed aside for Carson Wentz. I guess it all ties back together. So now that there's a need in Indianapolis, the price goes up for Nick Foles. And part of the challenge is coming up with the right outcome. And it could be that Nick Foles eventually would go to the powers that be in Chicago and say, look, I've given you guys plenty. I've tried. You guys don't want me here. Don't hold up what would be a chance for me to go play. But the Carson Wentz angle is intriguing. If it's true that last year he didn't react well emotionally and mentally to the drafting of Jalen Hurts, I don't know how he reacts to the return of Nick Foles, unless it's made clear from the get-go that the moment Carson Wentz is ready, that's when Nick Foles goes back to the bench.
Tom Brady, 44 years old, gets a day off practice. Does that mean he's allowed to indulge himself? Tom doesn't do that much unless it's avocado tequila.
Yeah, I don't know what indulge means for him. Is it an asparagus based cake with seaweed based icing? I don't know, but you know, he just keeps going, man. Father Time is undefeated. But Tom Brady is fending him off better than anyone has in years, if not ever, in the NFL.
Mike, where is this situation in Minnesota headed? Mike Zimmer sounds very disappointed in his unvaccinated players. Kirk Cousins on the protocol list. His vaccination status, I think, remains unclear, but the suggestion is that he hasn't been. This could be a major problem for a team given Cousins' value and importance to that offense.
Well, and, you know, this is the reality that teams are facing. They want players to get vaccinated, and players who are on the roster bubble will be gone if they're not vaccinated. But the guys who are untouchable, and I talked to a general manager not long ago. He said, I've got 8 guys who are never going to get vaccinated no matter what, but 7 of them I can't cut. I think what's going to happen with those guys, even if they're untouchable now, the moment they slip, the moment that the cap reality suggests that it's good to move on from them, they're not going to get any consideration. They're not going to get any benefit of the doubt. Those guys are going to be gone. Every city where you've got untouchable players who are taking this position that I can refuse the vaccine because there ain't a damn thing they can do about it, the moment they can do it, that's when they're going to do it. And I think all these guys are going to be carrying that mark from team to team, from city to city. Now, some coaches feel more strongly than others, but I think in Minnesota, anybody who is using the fact that he's untouchable financially or because of his value to the team to not get vaccinated, when it's clear that Mike Zimmer believes that this is just one of the basic boxes you check to show that you're committed to trying to win football games and being available to your team, those guys are not going to get the benefit of the doubt, and those guys are going to be gone. And I think this means that there's no way Kirk Cousins will be with the Vikings after 2022, and I think it increases the chances that he gets sent to the bench at some time next year, not this season, but next season, so they can see what Kellen Mond can do.
Fascinating to hear Vic Fangio. We know he was here, and he's not given to just kind of complimenting people, but he seems really enthralled with Patrick Surtain the second. And I also laughed. You guys had an item where Surtain was asked about the difference in Alabama practices versus Broncos practices, and he obviously acknowledged the altitude and the humidity in Colorado, but he said that at Alabama, preseason practices were a little grueling and they're a little smoother in Denver. So I found that really funny.
Oh, and that's the way it is. You know, one of the knocks on Alabama running backs is by the time they get to the NFL, they're used up, and that's one of the reasons Derrick Henry lasted as long as he did in the draft, and he's been anything but used up. But it really is an intense, and it doesn't have the same level of protection that the NFL has. You know, you don't have a union, you don't have a strong NCAA. We've seen all of that. We saw it last year when they were trying to figure out what to do with the pandemic. The NCAA, they're just there to make sure nobody's getting more than what they should, and that purpose is now gone. So, you know, it wasn't a surprise that Urban Meyer got whacked by the NFL this year for having practices that were too intense. He was having his college practices, and these guys in some of these programs get the crap beat out of them, and it is a relief when you go to the NFL and realize it's not nearly like it was when you play for one of those hard-ass college coaches.
Mike, we're in the middle of it here in Chicago, but there seems to be an undercurrent of maybe enthusiasm or positive reviews regarding Justin Fields on social media, or people in the industry tweeting, talking to each other. Are you getting that sense that it's going to be very difficult to keep a lid on this if he looks as good as he seems to be looking in practice and in preseason games?
One of the things I love about the preseason, I would say the only thing I love about the preseason, is getting that first glimpse of rookies, especially quarterbacks, on a field against other NFL caliber opponents in their uniforms. Do they look the part? What does the ball look like coming out of their hand? Does it seem like they get it? Do they pass the eyeball test? And I think that's going to be the next big thing here for Justin Fields. What's he going to look like when he's out there? Is he going to make some plays in preseason games that make us say, holy crap? And I think back to Patrick Mahomes in 2017, when the Chiefs were fully committed and Matt Nagy was on the staff to keeping Mahomes on the bench all year long, there was a play that Mahomes made against the Titans where he rolled to his right. He did that thing where he looks behind him at the referee to make sure there isn't a holding foul or any other flag that's been thrown, rolls to his right. He's getting a guy right in his face, and the guy hits him right as he throws it, and it's a 50-yard laser to a guy who wasn't wide open, but he got it to him. And that was the moment for me that was like, holy crap, this guy's going to be good. Those are the moments that I look for from rookie quarterbacks in the preseason, and that's going to be Fields' chance to sell people on the idea that he's ready to go sooner than later.
Great stuff as always, Mike. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, see you guys.
That is Mike Florio. Always fun to talk to him. We're going to bring in Dan and Layla next. Always fun to talk to them.
Oh, yeah.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.